Man, I tell you what, a lot of powerful imagery in that song. Very few words, but there's some passion in that. And I want to get right to the point this morning as we kind of kick off week number four of the This Is Us series. And I want us to understand that, you know, some of us are probably here this morning, you've been going through this series and you've been hoping to get traction. You still might be finding yourself in a place where you're stuck and you're like, I just don't know how to get to a better place. And you're thinking those words. I need you to say something because I'm about to give up on you. I'm about to give up on us. And so if that's where you're finding yourself, I just want you to know, regardless of where you are in your current marriage, regardless of what you're experiencing, you can get to a better place. Regardless of what tough things you're experiencing, you can get to a place where you actually enjoy your marriage again. So today I want to kind of hone in specifically on married people today. And if you're dating or you're, you know, trekking toward marriage, it's not that this doesn't apply to you. It may not directly apply to you because you're not at that point yet. You're still trying to discern if you really do want to get married. In fact, I ask couples every time I meet with them pre-marriage, I'm like, do you still want to get married to each other? And they laugh, oh yeah, we do. And I'm like, no, I'm serious. No, I'm like, it's not that I'm trying to not get you married, not married, but I just want to make sure this is what you want to get into. And so, and if you've been married or, you know, you're maybe divorce is a part of your story, my prayer has been this might connect some dots and even there might continue to be some healing out of that experience for you. And so I want us to see today that all marriages can actually get to a better place. And it requires us to do some things and open ourselves up to some things. But if you're feeling stuck today, you can actually get back to where you're enjoying your marriage. So really excited you're here this morning. My name's Kurt, by the way, if we haven't had a chance to meet. And really excited you're here for the fourth installment of This Is Us. And we're going to start in a book of the Bible. It's a bit odd to start with today. It's back in the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament. This is not necessarily the book you think of when you think of encouraging words. This is Solomon speaking here. He's one of the wisest men, though, that ever lived. And it's kind of dark, kind of pessimistic, but there's this little nugget I want us to see in this. Before we do that, let me give you the bookends of Ecclesiastes. Chapter 1 is this whole idea of, you know, life is hard. And then chapter 12, then you die. All right? And so it's kind of a summary of the whole book. And so in the midst of these 12 chapters, it's like, cheer up. All right? Life could be worse. And so, you know, it's trying to kind of set context that regardless of what you're going through, regardless of how mundane things feel, life could be worse. Sometimes we get so focused on our current circumstances. In fact, Ecclesiastes 1:4 says, generations come and generations go. And yet the earth, it goes on forever. So Solomon is kind of painting this picture here that life is kind of like a grinder. And if you don't know what a grinder is, it's like picture a meat grinder, right? It's like you go in and you get ground down and tore down and then you come out the other side. And he talks about the streams and the rivers all flow to the sea and yet the sea is never full. How the sun sets, you know, rises and sets and then it goes right back to where it started. He's like, all this just seems meaningless at times. He's like, it's kind of like going through a grinder. But he's like, remember, you're here for a very short time. I mean, he says, again, generations come, generations go. The earth goes on forever. He's like, the days are very, very long at times. It feels like the years go very, very fast. And then you get to chapter 12. It gets even more depressing. He says, remember your creator in the days of your youth before days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. All right, and this is like when you get older and you're like, my body's falling apart and I can't, my knees remind me of how old I am. And some of you are like, why exactly am I here this morning? I thought this was going to be encouraging. Well, just hang with us, all right, because again, Solomon's just trying to show us that life is hard and you go through ups and downs, difficult times, and sometimes you don't know how it all fits together, but it's like a grinder. And then we find this little nugget in Ecclesiastes 9 where he says this. He says, endure life with your wife all your miserable days. No, he doesn't say that at all. Look at what he says. This is the only place you find a verse like this in the whole Bible. Right in the middle of this depressing book, he says, enjoy life with your wife whom you love. And then he goes on all the meaningless days. I mean, he's trying to get this picture of you're going to go through things that are going to be difficult to understand. And yet in the midst of this, you can actually get back to enjoying life with your spouse. So that's what I want us to see today. I want us to, you know, think specifically those of us who might be feeling a bit stuck. And if you identify, I'm going to give you seven kind of phases of stuckness or things we kind of see when couples get stuck and how to move to new places. And so as you look at these, I want you to think, okay, there's things I can do. And I'm going to give you some walkouts today that can get you to a different place. And so one of the problems we see with couples when they get to places of being stuck, and I always say, I'm not a marriage counselor. counselor, though I do meet with couples periodically, and I've met with a lot of couples over the years, and our team meets with couples, and usually when they come to talk to us, there's conflict going on, and most of the time, they are stuck. And so, seven things that kind of can help us identify if we're there, and then how to get some traction to get to new places. All right, so number one, first thing that happens when couples get stuck, you know, in what we'll call the grind, is you turn your spouse into the grinder. All right, you know, we talked last week about how one of the reasons for marriage is, God's intent for marriage is that we would go through the joys and the difficult times of life together. The hills, the valleys, the mountaintops, as well as the really difficult times, and we have someone to go through those with. And yet when we get stuck in our marriages, we actually turn our spouse into the grinder. We actually put them in and push them through and grind them up. I mean, it's sometimes like guys, it's like you begin to hear your wife talk and it's like hearing Charlie Brown's mom. It's like, wah, 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 wah. You know, and ladies, you look at your husband at times and you just kind of look at him and you're like, they told me. I mean, everybody said I shouldn't marry him and I didn't listen. You know, and so, you know, you start doubting, you know, the whether you're with the right person or not. And if this is you, if you've ever had these thoughts, you're probably stuck, all right? And so I want to give you an immediate walkout, something you can do right away, even right now. I'm going to give you a moment to do this, that can maybe free you for the rest of your life, all right? So if you're with your spouse this morning, all right, if they're sitting next to you, I want you to take your pointer finger out and just point it at them, because they love it when you point and talk. You know, they love that. So just look at them and go and say these words. Go, you're fired. Just do it right now. Just say, you're fired, all right? You're not my source, all right? Now, some of you might go, oh, woman, you sucked the life out of me. Don't say that. That's on you if you say that. Just say, you're fired. You're fired. All right? Because, see, here's where couples really get into it. All right? Here's what happens right here. This is like the ultimate definition of stuckness right here. See, when you set your spouse up to be the solution to all your problems, you know, when you think they're all your problems, then you set them up to be the solution to all your problems. So when you think everything we're dealing with, it's hard, it's all her fault or it's all his fault, then you're setting them up to also be the solution. And I don't know that there's any definition of stuckness that's better than that, where you set them up to be both the source and the solution to all your problems, because you're in a place where you're waiting for them to change. You're trying to change them. You're actually putting them through little tests every day. You're leaving something out on the counter just to see if they'll take care of it. You're doing all these. They don't even know they're being tested. And you're like, see, I knew. He doesn't pay attention. She doesn't pay attention. They didn't even know it. See, when you see your spouse as both the source and the solution, all right, then you're in a posture where you're constantly trying to change them, because you just think, well, life's not going to be better until they change. And remember Dr. Phil? Anybody remember Dr. Phil? He had a great question, which I wasn't a fan of him, but I loved the question. He'd say, how's that working for you? You'd probably are like, I'm pretty tired. It's exhausting trying to change my spouse all the time, because it is. It's hard. It's miserable. All right? And there's a better way, which we're going to look at today. Second thing that happens when couples get stuck is you begin to question your compatibility. Now, last week, I broke down the word compatibility, and I don't have time to do that again today, but if you weren't here last week, go back and listen to the podcast from last week, because compatibility is not what you think it is, all right? It's not at all what you think it is, but, you know, this whole idea of what we think compatibility and chemistry is, you know, we begin to question this, and you know what we do when we begin to question our compatibility, at least the way we understand it in our marriage? We turn to, like, social media and Facebook, and we're like looking at everybody else's marriage, and we start, you know, getting all fired up. We're like, well, look at her husband, man, he knew exactly what she needed. She just needed a bouquet of flowers, and he brought it to her today. Now, you don't know what led to that bouquet of flowers, probably 25 stupid things, right? But all you see is this highlight moment, and then you're like, see, we're just not compatible. We never took a test, all right? We probably aren't even supposed to be together. And you have to be careful, because when you start thinking this, you begin to think, the only way I'm going to get back to enjoying marriage again is to find a new spouse. And I have somebody that understands me, somebody who just, you know, our personalities blend a little better, all right? And so here's something I want us to understand this morning. This is so important. Character always trumps chemistry, all right? Character always trumps chemistry. This is so important. We're so enamored with chemistry and compatibility. And just out of curiosity, how many of us here today, if you're married, would say your spouse is quite different than you? Just, yeah, look around the room, like more than half of us. I mean, Julie and I, we are so different on so many things. We were alike in certain ways, but we are so different. I mean, when we got married, she loved to dance, and it's not that I just couldn't, but I didn't want to, all right? But you know, she's wanting to go out, and I'm like, oh, no, I don't know how to do that. And we went line dancing, and, you know, apparently these women thought I knew what I was doing, and I'm like, I don't have a clue. It's like marching band, you know? You just follow the rhythm. You know, and, no, I won't go down that line. It's a whole other story. You know, she was like fourth child. I was first child. I mean, we just approached life different. In fact, when we moved to Fishers, we used to go hang out at the Chick-fil-A, or the Chick-a-fil-A, as we call it in our family, and we'd go into the play area, because that's a great place to meet people. And so we were trying to build a launch team. We're like, well, where else would you go but Chick-fil-A? So we'd go hang out at Chick-fil-A in the play area. And, you know, we'd eat, and then our kids would want to run in there right away, and there's this ginormous sign on the way in that said, no food or drink in the play area. And see, I'm really good at interpreting what signs mean to say. And so, you know, I'd be carrying the bags in, you know, and the little food, you know, whatever the kids hadn't eaten in our drinks. And Julie's like, oh, the sign. She's like a rule follower, right? And yet I'm like, oh, you know what they mean by the sign. And she's like, girl, exactly what does the sign that says don't bring any food or drinks in mean? I mean, just help me understand that. It's pretty clear. I'm like, they just don't want you bringing the whole tray in. I mean, it's as long as it's just a little, they're fine, right? And so this is kind of how we work on a lot of fronts. I see a stop sign, and she thinks you really are supposed to come to a complete stop. And so, you know, we're just different, right? We're different, and it's beautiful in so many ways, in so many ways. But see, here's the thing. In great marriages, character trumps chemistry. And here's why. This is so important. Because commitment flows out of character, not chemistry. Think about that. Commitment, which is critical to a marriage, flows out of character, not chemistry. Third thing we see when couples get stuck is you begin to repeat mistakes and develop patterns. See, we all have patterns to our relationships in our lives. And a lot of times, you know, when we meet with somebody who's kind of stuck in their marriage, you know, they'll come in and they'll say something like, well, we just can't get past this issue. And we'll say something like, well, what have you tried? And they're like, everything. And I go in my mind, I don't think you have. I think you've probably tried the one or two or three things you know how to try, and you just keep repeating them over and over again, and it's not doing any good. And so these are actually called marriage scripts. And marriage scripts are, you know, when you have an issue that comes up, maybe money, that's the most common one, or sexual, you know, frequency of sex, or how to parent kids, or, you know, how to handle the in-laws. These are all the things that create a lot of tension. And usually, you know, the issue is never the issue. You know how that goes. It's like this, we say this is the issue, but there's usually an underlying issue. It's like the iceberg principle. And yet the issue pops up, and like an actor, we just pick up the script that we've always used, and we think it's going to solve all our problems. We respond the same way. We read it word for word almost, and it never resolves the issue. We're stuck. And so, you know, in our home, as we're raising our kids, you know, we always tell our kids, man, it's okay to make mistakes, right? But see, the book of Proverbs talks about this, about how, you know, we find ourselves doing these same things over and over again. The book of Proverbs actually, I love this is so visual, this verse right here. It says, as a dog returns to its vomit, think about that, so a fool repeats his folly. You've probably all seen a dog return to its vomit, right? Well, so in our home, we tell our kids, it's okay to make mistakes. You can make mistakes. Like, you're never going to get to a new place or do something new if you don't try something you've never done before. But we're not a big fan of foolishness. So, you know, what Proverbs is talking about is there are certain things we know don't work that we just keep going back to over and over again. So the writer of Proverbs says, as a dog returns to its vomit, which is what happens so many times in our marriages. And see, so my hope is that, you know, today we might get a few new walkouts that we can try or implement or hone in on that are different than what we've been trying to get some new traction. Because God's a fan of your marriage. He actually wants your marriage to be successful. Fourth thing, and this is the big one. This is probably the biggest one on the board. When we see a couple that gets stuck, you'll often find somebody who's closed their heart. And we close our hearts for various reasons. Usually it's because we don't feel safe with someone, or there's been a lot of wounding that's taken place, and there's just been calluses that have begun to form around our heart. For men, we often close our hearts when we feel judged, when we feel controlled, when we fail. You know, for women, it's oftentimes when women feel disconnected from their spouse. It's oftentimes when trust has been jeopardized. In fact, I had a guy, you know, talk to me a few years ago where he came in and he said, Kurt, I just think my wife wants me to quit my job. I'm like, well, why do you say that? And so he started explaining, you know, what was kind of going on and the tension they were experiencing. And he's like, she's always just saying, your job's the problem. Your job's the problem. I'm like, I don't think she's saying you should just go out and quit your job. I don't think that's it at all. He's like, really? I'm like, no. I think what she's saying is you are so committed to your job, and that's like first and foremost all the time, that she feels disconnected from you. And so the problem is your commitment level to your job, how it's above everything else. I think she just feels disconnected from you. Because this is what happens, and we begin to pull back and close down. This is why we always look at the heart when it comes to issues. Whenever we get stuck, in fact, Proverbs 4 talks about this. It says, above all else, guard your heart. Why do we need to guard our hearts? It says, because the wellspring of life comes from your heart. This morning, I want us to ask ourselves, you know, is my heart open or is it closed? Is my heart open with my spouse or is it closed? So go beyond your spouse. My heart open with my family and friends, or is it closed? Last week, we looked at the two vows of the marriage relationship. And we find these in Genesis chapter 2. But here's what it says. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast or cleave to his wife. So this is the leave and cleave principle. It's the first vow of the marriage relationship. It's the vow of loyalty. It's this idea that we're to leave our family of origin and cleave. Now we're to make our spouse first and foremost in our life above everything else. Everything else pales in comparison to our commitment to our spouse. It's a vow of loyalty. And then he goes on, the writer goes on and says, they shall become one flesh. So what was once two is now one. This is the vow of intimacy. It's way more than just a sexual intimacy. It's a physical intimacy. It's an emotional intimacy. It's a relational intimacy. It's a spiritual intimacy. I'm totally open and honest with my spouse, and it's okay. And so it's this idea that we're less and less alone. We're not two anymore, but we're one. We're more and more connected. It's the vow of intimacy. And so fast forward a couple thousand years, Jesus is recasting this kind of picture of marriage that was given to us in Genesis. And the religious leaders kind of come and they're trying to question him on it. And they say, well, Jesus, if that's the way marriage is supposed to be, then why did Moses command divorce in certain situations? And Jesus is like, well, don't jump so fast to this whole idea of Moses commanded it. He didn't command it. He actually made a provision for it, because you can't expect someone to stay bound to someone in a relationship if the other person isn't fulfilling the vows of the marriage relationship. And so here's how this kind of plays out in Matthew 19. The religious leader said, well, why then, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Jesus replied, Moses, here's the phrase, permitted you, didn't command you. He says, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives and wives to divorce their husbands. And here's the money phrase, because your hearts were hard. And then he goes on and says, but it was not this way from the beginning. And so he says, the reason our marriages get stuck and begin to deteriorate and sometimes lead to divorce is because of hard-heartedness. And the Greek word right here is this idea of cardia sclero. Cardia is heart, sclero means to toughen or to become hard. And so it's this idea of hard-heartedness. And the idea here is what was once flexible and pliable and soft and tender has become inflexible and calloused. And Jesus says, this is the problem. When marriages get stuck, our hearts have become hard and closed and calloused. And we've all seen this, right? We've experienced this in one way, shape, or form, how over time our hearts become hard. I mean, for example, if you think back to like dating days, it's like when you're dating, like you'd carry her books from class. You'd open every door you went through. I mean, you'd lay on the floor and talk to her till the wee hours of the morning. After 2 hours on the phone, guys, you'd be like, honey, could you just tell me more details about your day? And she's like, I don't know where that guy's gone. I mean, he used to want to know everything. I mean, when you went on your honeymoon, you carried the luggage, right? You got home and you carried her across the threshold. And then about that time, we like develop a back problem, right? Like she comes to us 6 months later and she's like, honey, I think I want to try this couch on that side of the room. And you're like, honey, I don't think I can do it. You think you can lift it by yourself? I'll direct if you don't mind. I mean, see, our hearts become hard. We used to long to serve and now we want to be served and our hearts get a little hard. We used to long for reconciliation whenever there was a breach or any distance between us, but now we point the finger and we blame and our hearts become a little hard. And so Jesus, he says, it wasn't this way from the beginning, but over time, when calluses build up, our hearts become hard. And so we deal with this disease known as hard-heartedness. In the early days of Cross Point, when we were across the street at the school, We had a connection point similar to what we have in the Commons right now, where I had to hang out after service. And one particular day, there's this lady that was like on a beeline to me. I mean, I could see her, you know, coming down the hallway. And whenever I see somebody on the beeline, it looks like they're coming to me. I'll say to Eric, who usually stand out there, I'm like, oh, geez, I don't know. I'll butt pucker. I'm like, I don't know if this is going to be good. I mean, they look pretty upset, you know. And so she comes walking down the hallway, and she's like, you know, Pastor, do you know why my husband divorced me? And I'm just thinking, I didn't say this. I'm like, I have a pretty good idea. You know, I'm like, the whole bobbing head, pointing the finger. I mean, you lose that, and it might have worked out a little better. But I didn't say that. I just listened for a moment. I don't even remember what she said to me. I don't remember. I don't know her name. I don't know that she's still here. But I, you know, at some point in the conversation, I just said to her, I said, hey, do you mind if I just build into you a bit? Do you mind if I pastor you for a moment? She's like, well, okay. And I said, listen, I don't understand why your husband divorced you. I don't know anything about your marriage. I'm sure it's deeper than just one thing. But I said, you know, here's what I do know. I said, you know, just looking at you, you have the potential to be a very, very beautiful woman. And she looked at me, almost like nobody'd said that to her before. And she's like, I do? I'm like, you do. But this whole, like, you know, bobbing head, and I said, you got like a ginormous chip on your shoulder. And I don't know where it came from or who put it there or how long it's been there. And I don't know how long you've been carrying, but man, you manage it really, really well. And here's what I know about hearts, and specifically closed hearts. See, when we close our heart, you only have one heart, right? It's the same heart you love God with. It's the same heart you love your spouse with. It's the same heart you love your kids with, your family, your friends. You only have one heart. And when you close that heart down towards someone, every single person you come in contact with experiences that closed heart. Every single one. And, you know, we have to remember that there are things that have happened. And we may have a good reason that our heart's closed. We may have good reason that the calluses have formed, because it's like when you're out shoveling in the garden and you get a callus, your body naturally responds to protect itself. But what I want to say to you is the same thing I said to her that day. You know, those calluses can begin to be peeled back one layer after another. And it can start today. And you can begin to get back to having a pliable heart. I don't know what's happened. I don't know your story. I don't know everything that's happened. But you can begin to open that heart up again. Because see, what happens when we close our heart is we begin to isolate ourselves from others. I mean, we begin to, you know, we observe this all the time. We see couples that are struggling, and all of a sudden, you know, they stop coming to service. They stop going to their small group because, like, we don't want anybody to see us struggling. We don't want anybody to see us in this state, so we just kind of isolate ourselves. And what we end up doing is we shut out any voice other than the one we want to hear. And one of the things that happens when you close your heart off to other people is you begin believing the lie that says, well, nobody has ever experienced what I'm experiencing. Apparently, nobody knows what I'm going through. And when I hear that, when somebody comes in, it's like, well, I just don't think you understand. I just want to pop them in the face. That's what I want to do. I mean, and you know, every now and then, you know, they'll even look at me. Somebody will say, well, Kurt, it's easy for you. I'll give them some, you know, pastoral advice. And they'll say, it's easy for you. You know, you got a great marriage. And I'm like, do you think that great marriages just happen? I mean, why do you think I have a great marriage? You know what they'll say? Julie. I'm like, well, besides her being awesome, I mean, they never say, well, it's all because of you. I mean, it's always her. You know, I'm like, it takes work. You got to work to have a great marriage. It's not easy. And so I want to give you a visual on how to best think about this morning, something that hopefully will never leave your mind. So this is my dog, Minnie, right here when she was 3 months old. All right? Isn't she cute? Yeah. And see, here's what I want you to know. All right, everybody falls in love with the front end of a puppy, right? You know where I'm going? You see the cuddly 3-month-old fur, I just want to hold them right here. You forget they're going to get to be 80 pounds in like a bowl in a china closet, and they leave piles in your yard that you step in later, right? Because see, every puppy has a back end, right? But we fall in love with the front end. In fact, my kids, just over the last few months, they've been like, mom and dad, please, 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 please. You know what our dog Minnie needs? I'm like, a new home? I don't know. You guys don't want to feed her. You don't want to, you know, we don't need another kid. We're taking care of her. They're like, no, she needs another puppy. I'm like, she does not need another puppy. Everybody falls in love with the front end of a puppy. But see here, so if you ever find yourself saying, well, nobody understands. We must be unique. Nobody's been through this before. I just want you to remember that in this room here today, every single marriage that's in this room has a back end story. Every single one. It might look good right now, but every marriage has a back-end story. For Julie and I, it came at year 14. I mean, most marriages, it comes around year 7 or 8. The average, you know, lifespan of a marriage is 8.2 years in America today. And it's usually around year 7, marriages begin to deteriorate for one reason or another. We kind of blew through that. It wasn't until year 14 when we just kind of hit the wall. And, you know, our family was expanding, Crosspoint was expanding, there was a lot of stresses, and we were kind of going like this instead of like this. And so one of the things we did was we invited some additional voices into our life. In fact, we flew 1,000 miles from here to meet up with some mentors of ours for a long extended weekend, and they just poured into us, and they said some things to us that weren't easy to hear. They challenged us on some fronts. There were some moments that we laughed and, you know, we kind of began to recapture why we were actually together. Kind of peeled back some of the calluses. And so I want you to know that, you know, if you feel stuck, you need to be in community. You need to reach out. You don't have to go 1,000 miles away. For us, that we knew that's where that could begin for us. I mean, it can happen here. Maybe you need to see a counselor. Maybe you need to get into community. So you need to be around people where you discover, hey, people have gone down this road before and they actually have ways to get through it. All right, they've raised kids and they still enjoy their marriage. I mean, they know that at some point every teenager's brain, it just kind of boop, pops out. The bigger question is, when is it coming back? I mean, you know, these things that become tests and stresses on marriages, you know, you need to be around people who have been there, who can show you that there's certain ways that you can endure those and you can still enjoy life together. All right, so you have to fight isolation. And one of the reasons you do that is you get in community. That's why we have groups all over the place around here. Because we need to be in community, whether it's a Life Together group, you know, some kind of community group, a growth group, support group, a sports team. You need to be in community. It's one of our next steps today. Because see, when we get stuck, you begin to doubt your future as a couple. And see, a couple weeks ago, Julie Butchenkirk, in week number 1, she kind of unpacked this whole idea of every marriage has backup singers. And there's certain backup singers that we need to invite to be more present into our marriage, meaning we need people around us that support us as couples. Like we went to our mentors and said, we need you to build into us. There's other voices that we need to turn down or totally tune out. If you missed that week, you need to go back and listen to it if this resonates with you. Because for her, you know, for as Julie unpacked, she said, you know, there's certain voices that place seeds of doubt in our lives. And if you're at a place of stuckness and you have, you know, kind of these voices of doubt, they're probably saying things like, you know what, you don't deserve that. And it plants a little seed of doubt. Or, you know, he's never going to change. I mean, she's never going to change. Or, you know, it's never going to be any different than it is you to question the decision you made to marry that person. You begin to question whether you should have been with that person. You know what you begin to do? You begin exploring other options. I love what Scott Stanley, he's a professor of psychology at the University of Denver, says about commitment, one of my favorite definitions. He says, commitment is making the choice to give up all other choices. All other choices. Men, let me say something to you real quick, only because I love building into men. I know it's easy, guys, sometimes to feel like, man, if we could get back to this season, man, we enjoyed life together there, and we didn't have kids, and now that we have kids, I mean, sex life's out the door, and, you know, all these different things. Because sometimes, you know, guys have a tendency to think, well, the only way I'm going to get back to enjoying my marriage is if I have a different marriage. And ladies, you can fall into the same thing. But here's what I want us to see today. I got one more visual picture that I want to kind of paint for you real quick. All right, because see, so many times we start looking for greener pastures and it begins to pull us out of our current relationship, our current marriage. And here's what I want you to know about greener pastures. All right, wherever there's green grass, you know what's there? A septic leak. Just think about that for a moment, all right? And it's nasty. All right, wherever the grass is greener, there's usually something under the surface that's why it's that way. All right, listen, you don't need to go anywhere. You can stay in your yard and water your own lawn, all right? You see, to stay there, you need to focus in on your relationship because your marriage can actually get to a better place because you got a huge fan. God is one of your biggest fans. I mean, I'm not a believer that God is a fan of every couple that wants to get married and get engaged. I mean, I think God gives us a lot of freedom in choosing our spouse, so on and so forth. But once you make that covenant, I believe God equips you. And he gives us, through his Spirit, the tools to make that marriage work. It's not always easy. He's one of your biggest fans. So let me give you a few walkouts as we kind of wrap this up this morning. And these are specifically, if you're kind of feeling stuck, or you feel like you've been in winter and you're looking for spring, or you've just been in a dry season and you're wanting to get to a different place, a better place. All right, here's some things that I guarantee you walk some of these out and you're going to begin to see some traction. Here's the first one. The first one is the second one listed on your next steps on the back of your card. If you want to take this out, we've given you some next steps. God may prompt you on something beyond these. That's totally cool. We're just trying to give you a few things you can latch onto. First thing is maybe you need to unplug from your spouse as your source of life. All right, you know, you just made a pledge a few moments ago. If they're with you, you said, you're fired. You're no longer my source, all right? I'm not going to look to you to be my source any longer. 1 John 4 says that God is love. And so I want you to picture your life like this big old giant vase that's empty, and every day you need to go to the source, which is not your spouse, to get that filled up. You need to allow God to pour into you. He is the source. He's the source of life. You need to allow his grace to pour into your life, his forgiveness to pour continually into your life so that you can then be filled and you can go, when you see your husband or wife, pour some of that into their life. Pour some of that into your kids' lives. And some of you, man, you got a whole bunch of them. You got like a gaggle of kids like we do. Right? And some of you, like when you go to your office, you can pour into those people's lives. But you have to remember, your spouse is not your source. I have to remind myself, Julie's not my source. She's awesome. I love her as a partner, but my source is God. And when I get filled by God, I'm able to love more generously out of that. Some of us need to make that shift today. We need to turn to God and say, God, I need you to begin to fill me. Maybe I need to receive you for the very first time. Second thing, we need to take personal responsibility for our hearts. You know, some of us, we need to take responsibility for the condition that our heart is in today. We've been blaming our ex-spouse or blaming our current spouse or, you know, that person I dated all these years ago really damaged me. Listen to your heart. You only have one heart. Right? You need to take 100% responsibility for, you know, what's going on there. And when you begin to do that, we stop blaming. We stop trying to change the other person. And so maybe the question for you is, God, can you begin to soften my heart today? And maybe there's a good reason that there's a lot of callousness around it. But it's saying, God, I don't want to live this way anymore. I want to begin to be more soft and pliable. I want you to begin to peel back the callousness. It can begin. And it begins to change things immediately. Immediately. And then the last one, some of us just need to remind ourselves why we married him or why we married her. In fact, when I do wedding ceremonies, I always ask the bride and groom a couple weeks before the ceremony to send me an email of why they chose that person to marry. And then when we get to the ceremony, I know they're going to be going through two or three of the most stressful weeks of their life, you know, leading up to their marriage, not years. I mean, that's later maybe, but, you know, it's going to be incredibly stressful. And so when they stand there that day committing their lives to one another before they share their vows, I just repeat back to them why they said they wanted to marry the other person. And I'll look at the bride and I'll say, you know, why him? I mean, of all the guys out there, why in the world did you choose him? And then I'll read to him the reasons that she chose him, just to remind them. And I'll tell them, you need to keep this list handy for the rest of your life. In fact, Gary Smalley calls it the honor list. Gary Smalley's been building, you know, dynamic marriages for years. And he says every spouse should have an honor list. And this is where you just write a list of all the attributes, all the noble things, the admirable things, all the reasons you chose your spouse. In fact, in Fight Club about 2 years ago, one of the early chapters I was a part of, we had to do this. We had to write a list. And I keep referring back to it. I bring it up every now and then. I add additional traits I'm seeing in my wife. And why do you do that? I bring that list up so I can be reminded when things are maybe tough or I'm you know, struggling a bit or we're struggling a bit, I can be reminded of why I chose her. I mean, it's not to pull it out and be like, well, she's not doing that one anymore. I need to erase that off the list. Don't do that, all right? There was a reason you fell in love to start with. Right, maybe you need to recapture why that was and to see how valuable your wife is, men, and women, to see how valuable your husband is. And so you hone in on a couple of these this week. I guarantee you will begin to see movement. You'll begin to see traction. All right, and you might not only recapture some of the enjoyment and the passion and all that God designed to be in your marriage, you know, that you've experienced at one particular point, you actually may get to an entirely new place. I mean, that's always my goal for couples. A lot of times they'll come in and they'll say, man, if we could just get back to this place. I'm like, have you ever considered that God wants to take you somewhere that you've never even been before as a couple? I believe God wants to do that. He's a fan. And so I want to pray for us as we close this morning and just ask him to meet you wherever you are this morning and to just begin whatever the desires of your heart are or whatever relationship is on your mind. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for the chance to be here this morning. We thank you that we can call you Father, that you invite us and tell us that we have a Heavenly Father, that we are your children and we can reach up and say, Dad, here's what I need right now. And that you hear our prayers. And so, Father, this morning, there may be some of us who are realizing I'm always looking to my spouse as the source for everything in my life. And so when maybe they aren't all that you've created them to be, because we all make mistakes, man, it really creates a wedge, and I need to turn to you as my source. And so, God, would you just begin to fill me right now with your spirit, with your love, with your grace? Father, if there's any of us in the room this morning who have been able to self-identify that our hearts are a bit closed right now, and we just want to start taking responsibility for that right now. We know that you're the one who does the work. We just have to be open to it. And so, God, if we feel like we've been in a closed posture and we're ready to begin to open that up, God, I just pray that with the meticulousness of your scalpel, that you would begin to remove the calluses that may have a good reason. There may be a lot of things that have happened that have created the woundedness, the shutting other people out. But God, I just pray that you would begin to pull those layers of skin gently aside so that we can feel again and so that we can have a tender heart again to the one that we love. And God, if we need to be reminded this morning of exactly why we chose our spouse in the first place, I mean, there was a reason we got together. It was a day where we just couldn't wait to spend another day, another minute, another hour with them. And if we need to recapture that, God, I just pray that you would flood our memories and our mind with all those attributes, all those things that drew us to them to start with. And just fill our minds with how valuable and how cherished they are. And God, may our hearts walk out of here overflowing. And Father, I just pray that your grace would wash over every single person in this room, every single relationship. God, that you would pour your grace over us so we can go and pour ourselves into others. Father, all we're looking for is a spark. Because we know it's not that far off. I mean, we sometimes think that, man, it'll take forever to turn this thing around. But we know a spark turns into a flame that before long is an inferno. And so, God, we just invite you in and ask that you would give us just a spark, because we know that's all it takes.